If you could look back to when you were starting out, what advice would you have given yourself when you made that leap from corporate to multifamily?
So one thing I would say for anybody starting out, you can read all you want. At some point, you just have to dive in.
Yeah.
And the best way you're going to learn is just by getting your feet wet and really diving into the details.
This is the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast, and I'm your host, Brian Briscoe. Now, this podcast is designed for the aspiring apartment investor and literally gives them the opportunity to ask the questions that will help them get to the next level. So if you're an aspiring apartment investor, this podcast is for you. Now, this podcast is brought to you by the Tribe of Titans Multifamily Educational Community. It's your one-stop shop for learning how to succeed at apartment investing. Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast. I'm your host, Brian Briscoe with Streamline Capital Group. Really excited for today's show. We've got Pooja Talati with us, and we're going to talk about her story and a lot of things about apartment investing. So Pooja, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Awesome. Great to have you. And if you would please, let's start out by talking about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So most of you are probably wondering, how did I end up in real estate? And I actually have a very traditional background. I was doing consulting at Deloitte on the strategy and ops side for a couple of years, went back to business school, focused in marketing, and then I ended up coming back to Deloitte for a year. Mm-hmm. Didn't love it the second time around, just a lot more travel. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up joining the Hershey Company. And doing marketing, because that was something that I was really passionate about. At that time, I was there for about 4 or 5 years, and my husband had just finished up all of his medical training, and we were moving to Charlotte. So while I was consulting for the Hershey Company remotely, my brother was already in real estate and had asked me, and we'd just had our first kid, and asked me, hey, you know, what you're looking at, what to do next, why don't you join our company? We need help in marketing. And obviously, mm-hmm. I had a marketing as well as like a strategy and operations background. So I said, you know, my husband and I had wanted to get into real estate in some shape or form, but there was no way I could do it full time while having a kid and then having a W-2 job. So I said, you know, now is a great time. We have income from my husband. I can take this risk, if you will. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I don't like it, I can always go back to corporate America and say, hey, you know, I tried this. Here's my story. Well, many years later, I am still in real estate and I've worn many hats. I started off on the marketing side, then did a lot of the internal operations. And right now I'm focused more on the asset management side at the company.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, when you jumped into real estate, did you join an existing company? Did you start your own, or what was the progression there?
Yeah. So I joined an existing company, but you know, it's still lean enough that I mm-hmm. was able to influence certain areas. And then after that, my brother and I, you know, decided to start another company. So that's JT Capital. And again, it's very lean when you start out. And then the idea is that, you know, you put together a short-term and a long-term plan, and then we're continuously growing each year and expanding the company, which is really exciting.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I love that idea. The short-term plan to get up off the ground and the long-term plan to grow. I think that's an important way to do it. When you started the company, you know, what did you want it to look like, you know, 3 to 5 years after you started it? And then compare that with where you're at now.
Yeah. So I think we're on track in the sense that it started off with just us partners. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, eventually we wanted to hire people because you got to think about it from a scalability standpoint. There's going to reach a point where you can only do so much yourself. And then if you really want to grow, then you need to invest back into the company so that you can grow. And the way you want to do that too is you want to grow knowing that the next step will come, as opposed to now you're here and mm-hmm. you're drowning because you don't have the scalability aspect of it and you're kind of playing catch up, right? So you have to be a little bit forward thinking. I do think that this current market has probably changed course for a lot of folks. We obviously are very stringent in what deals we're looking for just because of the market. A lot of stuff just isn't penciling out. And so I think part of it is patience and saying, okay, you know, now it's this type of market. What do we want to look for? What do we want to do? So I think it's also really important while you have your short and long-term plans to just be a little bit agile in the process.
Yeah. Something you mentioned is when you're thinking with scaling in mind, I look at it at the point, somebody said this once to me, and I think it's absolutely true. You know, if you're to the point to where you feel like you need to hire, you're probably 6 to 12 months late hiring. So tell us a little bit about your ideology with hiring, you know, how you went about the first couple of hires and, you know, when you decide to make the next move as far as adding new people.
You know, when we decided from the asset management side, we had grown enough where, let's just say when you know you're scratching the surface and then there's so much more you could do, we realized it would be great to have somebody else so that we can get even more granular, but then also set up the right processes so that we can essentially reduce the amount of time that we're spending doing certain things, set up that process, and then that will help us scale. So we knew we wanted the first person. They came on board. They have been absolutely fantastic. In fact, they just got promoted. That's how amazing they were. And then the other two hires that we just did recently, it actually came very organically. And it was through just relationships from over the years and then also just from connections that we had. And those I find to be the best because you already have this really close referral.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. It's nice when it works out like that, you know, the organic hiring and you like somebody, you work well with them and it works out like that. So awesome. Awesome. So let's talk about some of the deals you guys have done, the type of deals you did. And if you could, I'd like to see progression there too. So first part of JT Capital, you know, what type of deals, what size of deals, what locations, and then where are you guys at now?
Since we had been doing this for a while, even before JT Capital, we typically look for assets that are at least 100 units or more. So through the progression of JT, you know, our first asset we had was over 300 units.
Nice.
Then we have like a boutique asset that I absolutely love that is just a little under 150 units. And so they're all very different. You know, some are right outside one of the main metro areas, maybe like 20 minutes outside of a big city. And then one is literally right in the middle of a very nice downtown. So kind of very different, but we generally look for like BB plus assets, closer to maybe B plus A minus actually, so that we can add value. That's kind of our goal, is to add value, renovate the interiors, exteriors. And that's how we are able to capture increased value so that when it's time to sell, you know, we've ideally bought low so we can sell high.
Nice, nice. Now, the BB plus, just curious, why do you like those assets as opposed to other asset classes?
So I think that, and this is just, I think it's all personal, right? What you're looking for. And at our company, we decided, okay, we definitely want to hone in on a certain type of asset class. I didn't personally want to really look at the C or the D class assets. It's just not what our company guidelines are for what we want to do when we acquire assets. For other companies that do that, it works really well for them and they're set up that way.
Yep.
I think there's a lot of high risk and high reward, but we decided we don't want to go on the higher risk side, if you will. And then, you know, part of it is just, I do the asset management. You learn a lot over the years. And I could tell you, I've had some crazy stories. And sometimes things have happened multiple times. And you're like, okay, first time was scary. Second time, you're like, okay, I know exactly what to do. Not a big
deal. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And incidentally, I like the B-class assets. I started out doing a whole bunch of C-class. And in a way, I think we've graduated to B-class, but I think it's where you kind of get the best of both worlds, in my opinion, especially if you're doing the value adds. I mean, if you're at a B to a B-plus, there's always room to make it better, you know, especially if you're buying a B-class asset. And if you're doing the value add, you're probably buying B-class assets that, you know, haven't been renovated in, you know, 10 years or so. But I think that's a great spot to be. You know, there's not as much risk, but you still have the forced appreciation, everything else. But awesome.
Yeah. Because you never know, you know, how much deferred maintenance you're getting into. You can do all the due diligence you want, but unless if you've actually been able to rip up the floorboards, which you can't do during due diligence, you just don't know what's underneath and what that expense is going to look like when you take over.
Oh, yeah. You know, and we've had that with the C-class assets we bought. I mean, we had the largest purchase that we had was one of those where, you know, when we started going beyond the surface, scratching more than the surface, you know, it was just uncovering problem after problem after problem. And you're right. You never know what type of deferred maintenance is there. And unfortunately, if you're the one that finds it, you're the one that has to fix it, you know? So, but well, awesome. So what metros do you like and why?
In Texas, we're mainly in the Austin area. That's where I also live. So it's nice. It's just one of our properties, just a stone's throw away. Mm-hmm. And then in Florida, we mainly focus in Central Florida. So Orlando area, but we're open to like the tertiary markets. You know, Florida has a lot of great pockets, Tampa, Miami. And, you know, you do have to take into account when you're underwriting the high cost of insurance nowadays, especially with Florida and, you know, all of the hurricanes that come through, but that's something that, you know, you're getting into that, then you bake that into your underwriting.
Yeah. Now with Austin, for example, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper in there. I just want to hear your thoughts. I mean, a lot of people have said that like Austin's beyond its prime and it kind of peaked. You know, what are your thoughts and what are you seeing since you live there? You know, what are you seeing in Austin right now?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously during COVID, we had just a huge influx of people come in and the prices skyrocketed. Right now, because interest rates are really high, at least from the single family housing side, you're starting to see the prices, they're starting to decrease a little bit. But one thing I would say is you kind of just have to weather the storm. And what I mean by that is there's just a good amount of supply that's coming up right now, and it was unprecedented. It's been the most they've ever seen in this area. So it's just really competitive when you're dealing with all of the concessions in the market. But the way that you kind of look at that is at some point that's going to settle out, and whoever is going to be buying these lease ups, once they're leased up, they're not going to be, you know, renting these out for the competitively really, really low rates that they are right now. And just organically by doing that, they're going to be increasing their rent, then your rent will follow. I think right now it's probably the most supply we're going to see. And then I think it's going to start to be a little bit more normalized.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, what you mentioned is happening in a lot of other metros. You know, I'm investing in Salt Lake City and we're having record supplies this year as well. But, you know, how fast are these units, you know, being filled? You know, if there is that extra demand, obviously, when you brought a new supply on there, it's going to take a while for them to fill up. But once they're filled up, you know, I mean, things are back to relative normal, like you were saying. And then with where rates are right now, I think we're going to see a couple of very lean years as well. So awesome. Well, hey, thanks for all of that. Appreciate your insights on what's going on there. So another question I'd like to ask, and that's what's next for you?
I'm excited to share. So JT Capital, we are launching the JT Capital Strategic Income Fund. So I do want to share a little bit about this investment opportunity with everybody today. This particular fund, it's seeking to provide investors a diversified source of income along with like equity upside. And this is really based off of capitalizing on the robust fundamentals of institutional grade quality assets for multifamily sector, again, primarily focused in the Texas and Florida markets. Overall, the fundamentals for multifamily remain strong. Mm-hmm. And we believe that right now there is a small window here that is going to be a great buying opportunity. And so we want to be able to capitalize on that because there is going to be a shortage of funding. So we have a proven track record of managing over $1.5 billion of transactional volume, strategically identifying opportunities with just well-established network from like real estate operators to lenders and private equity partners, alongside with some partners. So over the years, we've just developed those relationships. Mm-hmm. The fund in particular will have two asset classes or share classes. We're going to be targeting around 8 to 12 assets during a 3 to 5 year anticipated life. So if that's something that interests you, feel free to reach out at invest@jtcapitalgroup.com to learn more.
Yeah. Awesome. I think, I think funds are a really good way to go for investors. You know, a lot of people like the ability to choose, pick and choose deals, but I think funds are a little bit safer and you still get all the same benefits of real estate. So it sounds awesome. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes to make sure if people are interested, they can just click and the internet will whisk you away to their website. So
perfect.
Awesome. So a couple of questions for you. I mean, if you could look back to when you were starting out, what advice would you have given yourself when you made that leap from corporate to multifamily?
So one thing I would say for anybody starting out, you can read all you want. At some point, you just have to dive in.
Yeah.
And the best way you're going to learn is just by getting your feet wet and really diving into the details. It's really, you you can read all the books. I've read a bunch of books and I'll be honest with you, from an asset management side, it was just so high level that you really don't know until you get into it. And I'd say same with, like, you can take all the classes you want, but they're not going to share with you all the nitty gritty. The second thing I would say is just be ready to be agile, flexible, nimble. If you ask anybody, what is a typical day like for a real estate operator? There is no typical day. Yeah. It varies tremendously. And, you know, it can be a lot of fun and there's a lot of work involved. So just be prepared that it is an investment. I find it would be really difficult if I was also having a day job and doing what I do. It's just not possible if you want to do it really well.
I agree. Awesome. So next question, you know, similar lines, you talk about jumping into kind of real estate from your corporate job. How about starting a new company when you guys did that? What's some advice you'd give yourself, you know, if you were able to, you know, hop in a time machine and go back and talk to yourself, what's some of that advice you'd give yourself there?
You know, I would say the best way also to start. So we had already had a company before. So, you know, we knew the logistics of setting it up. But I would say that the biggest piece too is real estate is very relational. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I think there's a fine balance. You know, you don't want to be transactional. You want to be building these relationships because they will last over time. It's big, but it's a small network at the end of the day. And so you want to be able to find the right people to partner with. And I think that is just huge. So, like, over the years, we've built these relationships to the point where a lot of these folks are not just partners now, they're friends. And, you know, you can look at them for advice. I, you know, for example, there's another couple of other groups that we've JV'd with. And mm-hmm. even though we may not be doing every deal together, we call each other up all the time to just bounce ideas. Like, hey, I'm running into this challenge for occupancy. These are the things that I'm doing. What have you been seeing right now in your market? It might be a completely different market, but it's just being able to feel comfortable to pick up the phone and call somebody else that's not at your company, but you know you can trust to get real advice. And if you can do that early on, I think it will really help set you up for success. So you don't feel like you're on an island alone. Like, there are people willing to help you out.
Yeah. And that's something that I do like about this industry. I mean, it ends up in a way you're talking with a lot of people in other companies that theoretically should be your competitors and end up. I found so many people to be just like that, where you pick up the phone, you call someone like, hey, I'm running into this, you know, what would you suggest? And it's very refreshing to have a community like this. So
absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, last question for you as we wrap things up, how can listeners learn more about you?
Yeah. So if you want to learn more about JT Capital, you can visit www.jtcapitalgroup.com, or you can email us at invest@jtcapitalgroup.com.
Awesome. Perfect. And we'll make sure that's also in the show notes for anybody who wants to check them out. So thank you very much for coming on today's show. Very much appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast by the Tribe of Titans. If you're still listening, you obviously liked it. So go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, leave a 5-star rating and review if you haven't already, and then make sure to check out our YouTube channel, which incidentally has a ton of video content that you'll also enjoy and learn from. Now, if you're interested in being on the show, go to our website, diaryofanapartmentinvestor.com, and fill out the questionnaire on the website. And for more educational content and for more information about our educational community, check us out at thetribeoftitans.info.